less frequently we come together to think about big things like these. But I was actually reading a book and I cannot... Oh, yes, I found that. So the book is called The Female Consumer. And I stumbled upon this book when I was looking at how, like, gender plays role in, like, climate-conscious shopping and seeing how that is relevant to purchasing power of the woman and how it really targets... the female, the eco or the sustainability, the sustainable fashion industry, for example, really hones into this idea that females are mostly the consumers. So they are the ones who are going to the grocery shopper. They're the ones who are going to the thrift stores generally because they're purchasing that for the home, you know. But yeah, so it was a very old book, and I think the dynamics have changed a little bit. So it's no longer just the female who is the consumer, but I do think it's an interesting way to think about and understand how, like, as a consumer, as the person at the purchasing side of things interacts with things like these and advertisements, for example, or even, like, advertisements on the TV and in journalism itself. Because for today, even if you open, like, a news website, there's, like, millions of ads that you have to cross them all the time, and they're so annoying, and they're always, like, flashing items to you to buy, so they're really tapping into that capitalist consumer behavior of ours, and the consumer generally is understood to be to have, like, feminine qualities of that we can manipulate their minds kind of thing, that they cannot think for themselves. So we have to tell them or we have to show them what kind of products are good for them kind of thing. Yeah.
That's great. I love how manipulative marketing is.
That's why I didn't end up doing, like, a marketing business minor, because it's like, this is very different from what I studied in communications. Like, this does not go together. Then I ended up doing, like, my minor in, like, policy and governance stuff.
I thought marketing and communications were very...
It's very common. But see, but that is, you know, the irony, because you end up you learn so much about how ads should be reformed, or, like, media and journalism should be reformed. And then you go in those companies and you go in those positions and you still didn't do it because you are supposed to sell. You are supposed to catch the people and make them read or make them buy. So it's the irony.
Oh, wow.
At least to me it is, you know.
Yeah, it's hard to find meaning in that.
Yeah, but people... Yeah, well, there's a lot of people who just do the jobs for the money because, you know, it is hard to survive.
Yeah.
You are not... You don't have the option to choose. I don't have it either. So...
There's something too about the not enoughness. I think that that women are more likely to fall prey to, I guess, is the sort of way that I want to frame that in some ways. Not altogether by any stretch of the means. I think we have different ways of demonstrating it as gendered people. But, you know, capitalism and consumerism definitely feeds on these ideas that we need this or that in order to be more than what we feel we are, right? And that that gap. And it's interesting, you know, when you were talking, Pranjali, about you know, women being advertised to about the eco and, you know, climate justice things, which according to the chart, and going back to this this gap tracker in the media, women's opinion in terms of technology, energy, and climate is less than men. You know, they're quoted less, and so they have less sort of prominence in those fields, and yet they're the ones who aren't necessarily designing these products for themselves, right? Mm-hmm. But they're being the ones that are marketed to buy these products, or conscientious of thrifting, perhaps. But you know, maybe that's both a mix of conscientiousness, but also income level.
Mm-hmm.
And so these real-time realities, I think, also get conflated about how the gap presents itself in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a very good way in how you could summarize my research project, actually. Yeah, I tried to do that. I really focused on Twitter, because back then you could scrape Twitter data, but now with like the API rules changing and like Elon Musk taking over and stuff like that. So I don't have, as a researcher, I don't have access to the public tweets to do my analysis. But whatever early data I could get, I really tried to look at how and what kinds of conversations were happening in regards to sustainability and eco, purchasing. How was that happening? And my research actually really showed. And I'm going to present this in a few places. So I'm not going to give the whole detail out here on radio.
Sure, you could.
But I'm going to some conferences. So, But the thing that came up was very interesting in how, like, even things like vulnerability was constructed and how targeting happened, because it is one thing to be portrayed as the people in the global south that they're vulnerable to climate change. So, well, they are not given enough agency to do something about that. It's really concentrated for the West to do something with the means and the powers and the tools that they have. And it's very interesting how often we consider women to be like vulnerable to things like a tornado or a hurricane, and there's all these relief systems in place for them. But then in decision making and the policy making related to that, they are not included in discussions for that. So if we are providing the reliefs, or if we are thinking the products should reach to those demographics, then they should be designing them. Like, how does it, yeah, why does it not happen that way?
Yeah, good question. And one that maybe we can ponder a little bit over the song break that we'll take. I think this is a good opportunity to listen to the other song that you brought, Parangeli. Do you want to introduce it?
Yes, I'm obsessed with Taylor Swift like a teenager.
Oh, I love her too.
But no, I mean, I thought maybe this was a good idea to play her song, The Man, from her album Lover. So we will listen to that. It's a nice song and really shows how things could be different if Taylor Swift was a man. But no, it really makes you think about, you know, if we were given the power and the agency, just a man, just like a man is given often, then how things could be different, or maybe they're not different. So yeah, that's the song about.
I would be complex, I would be cool. They'd say I played the field before I found someone to commit to. And that would be okay for me to do. Every conquest I had made would make me more of a boss to you. I'd be a fearless leader, I'd be an alpha type. When everyone believes ya, what's that like? I'm so sick of running as fast as I can, wondering if I'd get there quicker if I was a man. of them coming at me again. Cause if I was a man, then I'd be the man. 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 If they hustled, put in the work, they wouldn't shake their heads and question how much of this I deserve. What I was wearing, if I was rude, could I be separated from my good ideas and power moves? And they would toast to me, or let the players play. I'd be just like Leo in Saint-Tropez. I'm so sick of running as fast as I can, wondering if I'd get there quicker if I was a man. Of them coming at me again. Cause if I was a man, then I'd be the man. 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 What's it like to brag about raking in dollars and getting bitches and models? And it's all good if you're. And it's okay if you're mad. If I was out flashing my dollars, I'd be a bitch, not a bother. They paint me out to be bad, so it's okay that I'm mad. I'm so sick of running as fast as I can, wondering if I'd get there quicker if I was a man. You know that. And I'm so sick of them coming at me again. Cause if I was a man, as fast as I can, wondering if I'd get there quicker if I was a man. And I'm so sick of them coming at me again, coming at me again. Cause if I was a man, if I was a man, then I'd be the man. 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 I'd be the man.
Just checking. Was that last take more what you had in mind?
Pretty good. Could you try to be sexier? Maybe more likable this time?
Okay. Okay. No problem.
By the way, excellent work over there, Lauren. That was astonishing.
Thanks.
Welcome back to Intravenous here, Campus Community Radio from Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on the unceded territory of the Kwikwetlem, the Musqueam, the Squamish, and the Tsleil-Waututh people. Talking a little bit about the gender gap in media today, I'm Robin.
Tina.
And I am Pranjali, and I know the conversation has been really interesting so far because we're going all places. I'm trying to go all places at once. But I think I'm just going to like link it to the last thing that we were talking about, the consumer identity that is created by keeping the gender roles in mind, and how also the paper that was related to the gender gap tracker also notes that the most often than not, the role of caregiver and the nurturer is related to the women. And so it's like, it's very less likely that they will be interviewed, for example, for like a business or like a politics topic. So they'll be quoted less often also. And during the break, Tina and I was talking about something, and I accidentally said the word experts, and I thought that's true. Actually, there is also a parity in how women are represented in higher education, and then if they are considered as experts in their field. So even the experts, for example, if you are writing about a piece on like housing crisis, then you often like interview a person who is working in NGOs maybe, or who is a professor at SFU or UBC, you know, who looks into economics and all those things. And more often than not, those experts in those universities are men, for example. So yeah, and I will let Tina, you know, also talk about her ideas.
Yeah. She was judging my ideas early. She's like, don't say that. But I will say it anyways.
No.
So, yeah, I'm getting silenced. Okay, so I was talking about how I feel like women are not as represented in media because they are not as outspoken as men generally, because they're not allowed to be outspoken. And they were raised to be more timid and more shy and to just be in the background. Mm-hmm. And
I think upbringing and the expectations that we relate to a daughter is different from that we have to a son, for example, and then that we have from like a person in their 30s and 40s and in a career, you know, it's very different. So even if they're getting coded and what kind of stories they are getting coded, that is also interesting. I think it's mostly like family, healthcare. And that's important. That's good that it's happening. But then the question is it like reaffirming those gendered stereotypes? And is it enough? You know, that's the question that also comes to my mind. Mm-hmm. Robin, what do you think?
Fill in the gap, please.
Fill in the gender
gap.
Now, this is awesome, actually. At the show, we have like three women talking about gender gap in media, so...
Where's the diversity? We need a man.
Yeah, that's so interesting. You just reminded me of, you know, the comment section that you have, like, in YouTube Shorts or whatever shorts you view. Maybe it's on TikTok or Instagram, whatever. It's very interesting to see if a woman is talking about stuff like her menstruation cycle or, you know, her role as a caregiver in the family. You'll see very, very typical comments like, why is she talking about this? Like, keep it to yourself if you don't want to hear it. So it's very interesting how they're like, well, we also go through things. We don't talk about it online. You should keep it to yourself, you know? So, I mean, when we say diversity, it means equity, because equality and equity are different, are the same thing, but they are different because they mean that people who have been misrepresented or underrepresented or marginalized for so long, we should be giving them voice. That's what it means to give them equal voice. That's different from having, you know, or not having a male person. We are not saying, we are not male haters. Like, that's the word that they throw out there. They're like, you're a man eater or a man hater. Why are you saying that? And I'm like, for the longest time in the history, who has been underrepresented? Who are the people who are not given the voice? Even today, this is like literally the data from 2022, 2021. And it is just the English speaking in the Canadian context. Even if you go from this language, if you go out from English and go into like more quote-unquote Global South languages, it is worse.
Yeah, it was much worse.
Yeah. And the reason, I think, as you said, was also because experts and the leaders and the stereotypes that's constructed about being a female, you're not expected to, you know, raise your voice and talk about something on, you know, CBC News, whatever equivalent that is in your country. So, yeah, I think that's super relevant as well.
I think even relevant in Canada, right, where we're talking, I mean, the landmass is gigantic, and the disparity even between the expertise that is urban versus rural,
mm-hmm.
can be kind of classified in that same manner, right? Where we'd more likely hear from a man professor in agrology than hear from a woman farmer in the middle of nowhere about farming practice, mm-hmm. or, you know, agricultural futures or whatever it might be that relates to that particular topic. And so I think there's this split too between you know, money and power, sure, but also where people are living and you know, what kind of access they might have to the media or to technology, and how that may or may not frame what we think they know and have to share about things. It's interesting to me because, you know, media's changed a whole lot over the last, I would say, 10 years for sure. And the traditional forms of media have morphed, and we rely a lot more on social media than we do on, you know, print media or even television news. And can you even buy a newspaper anymore? No, you can, but you know, only if you have $5. They're really expensive because they've kind of gone the way of social media. But what's interesting to me is that the Canadian Women's Foundation found that more women in Canada use social media than men.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
However, they spend less time on the internet than men, and they have less access to internet than men. Due perhaps in part to higher unpaid childcare labor and housework, and because they might live more rurally or remotely in some cases. And so even though they're higher users and use it less, there's still this this, I guess, curation is the word that I'm gonna use, this curation that is for them but not necessarily from them,
mm-hmm.
in some ways, right? Which sounds kind of strange because social media is like, I post, I like, I share, you know, it's kind of individualistic and person-centered, but it's still curated to appeal to these gendered users in particular ways that are, and reinforce the topics and the stereotypes that the gender tracker shows in very particular detail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I can talk forever about social media and like looking at it from like a feminist SDS lens and all those things. But I think, yes, it's super relevant also in terms of like how the tracker really describes differently how the topics and how the representation happens. But I was just thinking about the floods or the disaster related news that happens, the news reporting around that. It's usually interesting to see that it's usually the females in the house that are shown in the vulnerable light, so they are represented as the ones that need relief, whereas when it's the time of disaster preparedness and policy making around that, there is no female. So when it is about giving them agency or the power to speak, or power to do something, they are not given that. But when they are supposed to be vulnerable, they are given the space to talk about it. So that's also something that was really interesting to me. But also in terms of social media, I think there's a lot that I want to say there, but I'm not going to say it, of course. Yeah, I mean, in terms of the consumers, we can say that also about of the social media data and the social media environment that we live in, the community that is created on the network. Because I think it was in 2011 that these it wasn't called social media at that time. It was called like social networking sites. So it was supposed to have this, like, you know, you're just connecting with your friends. And so I was just looking at one of my friends who is older than me at their Facebook, and their Facebook is drastically different from what my Facebook or my Instagram looks like. Mm-hmm. Because they would post every single update or every single thought that came in their mind, because it was like a chatting space for them.
Wait, even now?
No, it was in like 2011, 2010.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So they were like posting, like, come in this hall, or we are having, like, there are drinks in this room. So they were like chatting on Facebook.
Yeah, I used to do that too.
I was like, what is that? Isn't Facebook and Instagram just about posting the best photos of yourself?
Curated content.
Right? Yeah. So, like, how it even evolved over time, yeah. And how the norms of who makes or cooks or bakes a cookie over the Christmas holidays has kind of remained the same. It's still the mothers who do that and who post about their children that, oh, my children. I've looked at so many of those, like, posts by mothers who are like, you know, this is the holiday season, we're thankful to the family, but then I don't see the papas doing that. I've never seen my papa posting much about his family. Like, I don't know.
I don't think they post much in general.
No, they will post the most random, like, political links
or
and jokes.
Soccer or something.
Yeah, and I'm like, this joke is not even funny. And I don't know how most comics are, like, the most, like, comedic personalities in media or, like, even in Hollywood are male. Like, even, like, the comedy realm is really male-dominated, if you see that. That's interesting to me as well, because I'm such a person who consumes comedy all the time.
It's so off topic.
No, this is not off topic. Everything is related in this world.
Okay.
And so is this topic. But no, we just have like 2 minutes, so we can just, you know, wrap our thoughts and yeah.
Yeah. Wait, am I going first?
Sure.
No, that's too nerve-wracking. You go first.
Okay, well, this has been great. I mean, I had some really good ideas bounce off my head and, like, think about with you guys here. So, yeah, super helpful conversation, and I hope we can keep things going in this new year at Intravenous, you know?
Well, Intravenous will keep going for,
oh, yeah,
for sure. I know that, you know, when you're able to join us, lots of techno talk, and, you know, how that influences gender, which, mm-hmm, you know, it's really important, because we're moving more and more into a techie age with, you know, more questions and you know, more ways that it's influencing our lives, mm-hmm, and so understanding the ways that it impacts gender and the roles and expectations that we have for ourselves and also societally really impact on how we think about moving forward with technology. Mm-hmm. So important conversations.
And I will steal the word techno talks, because I like that wordplay. But no, let's go with Tina.
Yeah, I agree with everything you guys said. I learned a lot today about social media, about the gender gap. And I think we should teach our daughters, mm-hmm. to be more outspoken, just yeah. like Fred.
Make them be coded in the global.
Exactly.
Right. Thanks so much for listening. Stay tuned for Democracy Now!
Staff and volunteers.